Mr. Cardrell, too?
As I was saying, the number of British Royal Marines that were taken prisoner was about 23. I know we'd lost some killed on that action, numbers we could not get hold of at that time. Anyway, I think there were 23 of us.
So they were all from 41 Commando?
All from 41 Commando, yes.
And do you remember any of their names?
I do. Surnames, actually. Condren, Richards, Underwood, McKee, Northern Ireland, Darby, Balchin, Jerry Balchin. Others I could think of, but not just at the moment. We were marched at night. Every night we were marched, and then we were put in this building, like a barn with straw on the floor, on a junction of some roads, and we were left there for a couple of days. It was cold. And then, with no exercise, and then after that couple of days, we were marched away again. And I had great trouble marching. Everything seemed to seize up and terrific pains. However, after a night or two, a night I should think, I just couldn't go anymore. I just flopped down the side of the road and said, that's it, I can't do anything else. Everything seized up.
You mean your muscles?
Yes, the muscles. Everything seized up. I presume it was because we were laying in this cold barn for 2 days with no exercise. But why me alone, I do not know. However, the Chinese separated us then. Most of the Royal Marines went away by themselves, in one batch. And I was left given a lift by the Chinese on one of these ox wagons by a Korean driver. And there were several other people there at the time, Americans. So on one of these ox wagons there were two or three of us being carried along.
What was wrong with the others?
One was a young lad, about 16 or 17 years of age. And he had frostbite on his toes, so he couldn't march. Another had a leg wound or something like that. Various things like that, where they couldn't march, so they transported them on these ox wagons. And we would poodle along, and then at night time, and then they changed to marching by day, which must have been well away from the battlefront. And then, I don't know how many miles we would go in these things. Every time we marched, we had these ox carts or sledges, until we came to a house where we stayed over Christmas period. The Chinese were in charge of us all this time, but we were in Korean houses with Korean civilians cooking the food, etc. The food consisted of all Korean food.
What is Korean food exactly?
Well, this sorghum, as they call this maize, there was a food like corn, very big pieces of corn, not cracked corn, but very big pieces of corn which when cooked come out like large peas, that size. And of course, eating those things, they weren't soft, they were fairly hard. It sort of ripped all your stomach to pieces and tore your stomach to shreds. Consequently, diarrhea. Everybody had diarrhea. And you couldn't move fast or anything like that because you were ill, etc. And of course, all the underwear went then. That was no good. It had to be taken off, thrown away. Until you gradually got used to their food.
How did the Chinese react to the condition you were in?
They seemed to be pretty good to us, you know. They hadn't got a lot of medical attention. In fact, there was only one time I saw anybody get any attention. So whether they hadn't got any medical doctors or anything, I don't know. I remember Christmas Day 1950, the Chinese says, oh, it is your holiday, and we'll give you some presents. So we had a handful of peanuts each, monkey nuts. Still, we had something. And then sometime over Christmas period, when everything seized, I'm just talking about myself, everything seized up and I couldn't move. I just lay there for days and I could eat and sit up, but I couldn't move my legs. And then one day I was laying down and I felt I could move. And I moved the legs a little at a time, and from then on everything started getting better. We were 8, 10, 12 in a room, so we weren't cold or anything, all huddled together. And then the Chinese came and said, there were guards there all the time, but the English interpreter came and said, we want you to move to a camp where you'll get proper attention, plenty of food and everything like that. So some of us did try and get on our feet and get a bit of exercise, and eventually did manage to start marching to this camp.
Why do you think that you got the use of your legs back again, do you know?
Well, I don't know, but I should think it was some form of rheumatics, really. I'm only guessing because I wouldn't know at that time. But that's what I would say it was. I've had trouble since, but nothing like that.
You've had similar trouble, haven't
yeah.
you,
mm.
since you got back to Britain?
And then we marched to what was then called Camp number 5, Pak Dong.
Pak Dong?
Pak Dong.
How do you spell it?
P-Y-U-C-K. And that, as we marched in there, so it was more or less a Korean village on the water, on the river.
Is this the Yalu?
I wouldn't know. I should think it would be one of the tributaries of the Yalu. I should say we were almost the first people in the camp. And as I say, it was a Korean village with all the Koreans taken out and all the Chinese in there. And we were put in these huts and in companies, as they called them. And I was the only Englishman there in one of these American companies. I felt a bit put out because there was nobody to talk my sort of language. They were all boasting about American this and American that. And during the daytime, we could walk around. Everybody was weak. You couldn't carry anything. You couldn't do anything because you were so weak. You'd get a bowl of food in the morning and one at night and boiled water. And I don't think we got anything else. If we got anything else, it was like a very thin stew, a very thin soup. But generally speaking, it was just this sorghum.
You said that you were all weak by the time you got there, but yeah. Had people died on the march?
Oh, yes, there were people died.
From the Marines?
No, as I say, from the Marines separated. When I could not walk that time, the Marines, well, I was with, all went a different way. They went somewhere else. I should think you've recorded their travels. Richards and Condren and all that were in that group. So I should think you've got their record somewhere. Going back to the camp, in the camp they were formed into companies. One of the companies was a Turkish company. Nothing could get the Turks down. Nobody could get on top of them. They didn't understand Chinese. The Chinese had no interpreters. And of course, they couldn't get them to do anything, the Turks. Eventually, they did find one interpreter that spoke Turkish. But they were people that just did not want to do things. They just looked after themselves And I don't know, but I don't think many Turks died. It was only, possibly only one or two died in that time. Whereas the Americans, they were dying like nobody's business. There was sometimes I counted 36 every day, day after day, 30, 36 people being carried and dragged away to be buried.
What would they die of?
Oh, just a lot of them just give up, just give up. Then I saw black troops, black American troops. I believe they separated them into their own company, the Chinese. And while I was there in that month of January, 1951, I heard there was another Englishman in the camp, and I tried various ways to get from one company to another. The Chinese wouldn't let you; they were separated the companies, and there was always guards around that you couldn't pass. Anyway, I did eventually get over to see this other Marine, Corporal Hills. He was our engineer corporal. He had a wound in the thigh, and it turned out he was there in this camp before I was. And anyway, we had a natter and asked him how he got on and so on. I'll come and see you again. Anyway, I did see him several times. I'm talking about days now, not a long while. If I got the opportunity, I'd be over there the next day, sort of thing. One day, at one time, I couldn't get over there, and it was 2 or 3 days before I managed to get over there. And I said, "Well, how is he? Where is he?" And they said he died. I asked them what he died of, and there were no medical people there, so they said, "Well, it's probably just pneumonia. He was wounded in the thigh, got no attention." So I was sad, and that was my only English link gone. I got all his wallet and pictures and this and that and brought them home to his father when eventually I did come home.
Where did he come from?
Atherston.
Where's that?
That's somewhere near Birmingham, I believe. I went up to see him father, and he was, I believe he was a retired naval man. A naval officer. And as I say, I passed things over to him when I came home, and that was Pusser Hill, that's that, his nickname.
Was his
He was an
name?
engineer corporal, Hill.
Was it Hill or Hills?
Hill. Well, Hill or Hills, not sure.
You were saying that the Chinese couldn't get the Turks to do anything.
That's
Was
right.
that because the Turks were stubborn?
Oh, they were stubborn, and yet you see, they did not understand Chinese, and the Chinese had no interpreters. They couldn't tell them what to do because they'd just shrug themselves and walk away.
What type of things were the Chinese trying to get them to do?
Ah, well, we now come on to the indoctrination that the Chinese were trying to set up, teach people how to go on. But as I say, the Turks just wouldn't have none of it. They kept themselves to themselves.
So the Chinese were trying to get them to go to indoctrination classes,
That's
or?
it, yes, and listen to lectures, etc. But of course, the Turks did not understand, so it meant nothing to them.
Did the Chinese try any rough stuff on the
The
Turks?
I don't think so. We couldn't speak Turkish either, so we didn't know what was going on. But generally speaking, I didn't see any punishment that way. The only punishment I saw was when, as I say, it was a Korean village with all the, where the houses had fences and doors everywhere, gates and this and that. And it was so cold, we took the wood all from all the fences when Chinese weren't looking, naturally. And all the doors and gates we could find to burn to keep warm. And the punishment, if you were caught, was to hold the wood, the door, the gate, whatever it may be, above your head for an hour or 1 hour or 2, above your head, hold it up. And that was the punishment that went on. That's what I saw.
What would happen if you dropped it?
Well, you'd have to pick it up and put it up again. They'd just make you stand up there with this whatever you stole was above your head.
Did you suffer that yourself?
Oh, no. I wasn't caught that way.
Which nationalities did you see doing that?
Oh, Americans. I have seen Turks with this a gate across his, held up above his head, because everybody was at this, collecting wood to keep warm, building fires under the houses.
On this question of Chinese treatment of you, did you see people being beaten or ill-treated by guards?
No, I don't. I never saw any ill treatment. They favoured a treatment which was not a physical treatment. They favoured a mental treatment more than anything else.
How was that?
Well, we're jumping a bit now, but anyway, I'll tell you about what they used to do. They used to make you write an autobiography. It started off with one page. That was good enough. You'd write one page, and then it wouldn't satisfy them. So then they'd keep you apart and make you write another one. And then you got 2 pages, 3 pages, 4 pages, and still it wasn't good enough for them. So that's a sort of mental torture that they had. Well, it wasn't torture, mental treatment that they gave out.
Probably some people wouldn't mind doing that.
Well, we treated it as fun, really. Let me go back a bit. When my friend Hills died, I was a bit downhearted then. That was January, being the only British man in the camp. And plenty of Americans, Turks, other people there. And then I saw the British contingent marching one day. Members from the Royal Ulster Rifles, Royal Artillery, that were captured in January 41. And of course they made a British company then, the Chinese made them into one company, British company. And I eventually got over to join them, because being with British, it's a lot better than being with Americans. You got better treated and this and that, and everybody looked to each other for help, which you all got. Then they started this course of indoctrination. You had to listen to lectures for about 5 hours at a time, and the peace in the world and this and that. And what you would do if you were in their shoes, everything that related to political indoctrination. Sometimes you had to stand up, other times you had to sit down on the bare earth. And over the years, every man made a little stool so he could sit on. And the lectures were sometimes up to 5 hours, 4 or 5 hours. By the time the person spoke in Chinese and then he was interpreted into English, well, they were long. That's the... and then they were, on one occasion they were on about Taiwan. Taiwan belongs to the Chinese. And everybody in the company had to agree to this situation, and some people did not agree. So they were singled out, made to look small. Explain yourselves, why don't you believe this and that, and why don't you take our word for it, and this and that. Eventually everyone agreed, because at the end of these times, everybody would have a feast, everybody got fed, well fed. So everybody gave in the end, because it was you'd get a decent meal after it. They knew this.
Is there anything that you think you learned from these lectures? Or did it all just...
You agreed with them at the time, but when you look back now, there was nothing in common with them at all, really. Nothing in common. They could well have been talking and speaking the truth. Why not? I didn't know at that time, and I would agree with them. Nothing clung on, nothing held on with me. Just agreed at the time and forgot about it in the end afterwards.
So, did you find what they said convincing or not?
Well, some of it went on about the capitalist system, you know, some people have got everything and other people have got nothing and this and that, you know. That was the, I suppose they were trying to bring us down to their level in the way of living, really. A lot of them had nothing and they just wanted to. They thought everybody else in the world should be like them. That's what I would think.
Were the type of things they said new ideas to you, or had you heard them from other people in England?
Rather new ideas. We weren't brought up into the way of their thinking. I mean, to us talking about Taiwan belonging to the Chinese, well, that's nothing to do with us. I never even realised we were different people at that time, the Chinese and the nationalist Chinese. And as for these American capitalists, as they would say, it was out of our league. We were just serving troops.
Would anybody speak up at these lectures and defend capitalism,
Oh
or?
yes, that's what I say. And there were one or two that held out and make it more interesting, but in the end they gave way and said yes, we agree. And a lot of it was devilment, really. They weren't. They knew they could not stand up against these political commissars of the Chinese.
Were you meant to sign things that you agreed with and
Oh
signed
yes,
up
if I
for?
remember right, we had to sign various things, but we had hoped at the time that we'd get no comeback on it, and I haven't. So whatever we signed, we don't know. One of them was a peace treaty of some description. So there were no comebacks, there were no repercussions, not that I can remember.
Did you get non-Chinese people coming round to see you? People from Europe who sympathized with the
Oh
Chinese?
yes, we had what was her name? We had some English people come round. Tom Dreiberg, I believe he came there. And Monica Dickens. Came visiting our camp. And of course, all the lads at that time, all they wanted to do was to make sure that their parents or loved ones knew that they were alive. We did not know whether the Chinese communicated with the other side and gave our names to say that we were all right, or this, or things like that. So we'd approach these visitors, Tom Dreiberg and Monica Bennett, with lists of people, ask him to forward our names home.
Did they give any opinion to you, the British people who came to see you? Did they pass any opinion?
No, I can't recall them saying anything against their own kind. You know, they just come to, from what I can make out, they just came to see if we were all right. And of course, being British, everybody was happy to see them and couldn't understand why visitors from England came there when we were prisoners of war there. We just did not understand that at all.
Did you say that to them?
No, I don't think we did, no.
Do you think they did help you in any way?
I'd like to think so. I'd like to think that they, helped us. Whether it was in treatment or food or this and that, I don't know, but I'd like to think they would help us.
Did you come across a journalist called Alan Winnington?
Oh, yes. Yes, the name I remember, but I can't remember what connection. Alan Willington. Yes, but What it was about, I don't know.
You were saying that being with the Americans wasn't so good as being with the British. Why was that, apart from the fact that you were with your own people?
Well, the Americans were very, very downhearted because, as usual, they had nothing, and it was more or less help yourself and help nobody else. They didn't seem to want to put themselves out towards to help anybody else except themselves. But there's a lot of difference between the Englishman and the American.
Do any incidents stand out in your mind to illustrate it?
Oh, this is generally speaking. I can't. I would not talk about one incident. This is general.
Once you'd got over your problem with your legs, did you have any other illnesses yourself in captivity?
The only other thing that happened to me one time was night blindness. Sometimes they'd take us to this Korean cinema and herd us all in there, many was in there, and show us these Chinese, Korean war pictures at night. And on one occasion, after having to get out of these huts to form up into a parade, I could not see at night. This was night blindness. I found out later it's due to lack of vitamins, but I was not the only one with this. There were several, but that's the another type of illness that I had at that time. Didn't last for long, probably only a few days or a few nights.
Were you still suffering from diarrhea?
Oh, yeah, on and off, on and off. We had a better form of food and in the camp than marching up towards it.
But still different type Korean of style food?
Still sorghum. let me give you one instance. The Chinese used to do their best for us, perhaps, I don't know. We used to get food sent in by boat. Spring onions and things like that, and sometime there was boxes of pork was brought in. Pork was about 2-inch square lumps of pork in a box, and I can remember seeing this Chinese cook standing in front of the tap, or the faucet as the Americans would say, and he was washing this pork, these squares of pork, and they were green, and he was washing them. We had that for dinner that night, that pork. So that was green mould he was washing off. Didn't do us any harm. You wouldn't do it nowadays, would you? So, I suppose they gave us whatever they could.
Did your diet differ very much from what the Chinese were getting, do you think?
I would say early on, I suppose we had the same sort of food, but later we came on to our own Western food, which